I want to be sure that we move further during next year in terms of implementation, but at least we spelled out some broad parameters in which we, with which to try to help solve, in which to try to help solve the problems of third world debt. But as one who is very interested in this hemisphere, I can tell you that there's enormous interest on the part of our friends to the south, small countries and large, that we get on with this, and that our allies and others' private banking interests help us get on with us. On the economy, we end the year with a still growing economy, the lowest unemployment rate in 15 years, and 20.5 million new jobs created over the last several years. I've been able to keep my pledge of no new taxes for this year. And generally, I feel pretty good about it. There's some signs of concern that have been expressed from time to time by the Fed. But I think the main thing now is to keep it growing until every American benefits by this, the longest recovery in history. And on the ethics package, we sent an ethics package up early. Congress did incorporate many of the provisions in our government-wide ethics package into the law passed recently that was coupled with the congressional pay raise. I think the reform is long overdue. We didn't get everything we want, but we made a beginning out there. On SNLs, the package, which was not easy to come by, guarantees depositors that money will be safe and sets tough new standards to ensure that the crisis doesn't happen again. I'm disappointed in some ways with the Congress and with our progress or lack thereof in some areas. The crime package. We sent a comprehensive violent crime control package, which proposes augmenting enforcement and prosecution, strengthening current law, restricting certain semi-automatic weapons, and expanding prison capacity. But very candidly, it has not been acted on. So I'm going to have to come back now after the first of the year and try to push on that. Clean air. The House and the Senate took steps towards passing our bill this year. But we had some good clean air proposals. They were widely received, bipartisan fashion. But I'm disappointed that we haven't gone further there. Child care, I'm in a fight with the Congress in terms of philosophy on child care. I want to have as much choice as possible. We sent up a new major new child care bill and proposed $250 million increase in Head Start this year too, and now we're in the final throes of our budget process addressing these questions again. But I think you'll see some early action on child care. All in all, it's been a productive year. We've proposed a lot of new initiatives. I exercised the veto 10 times, and to date was not overridden on it. We've made progress. I didn't mention the minimum wage, for example, but I had to hold the line on what I thought was right, and then we did pass it at the level that I suggested. But I'm not overly satisfied, but I think generally that the first year has gone pretty well. I do want to make one comment before taking questions on the recent visit of General Scowcroft to China. There's a lot of interest in that, and following the meeting with Mr. Gorbachev, it seemed to me that it would be appropriate to brief the Chinese leaders. I made clear to them before the Malta meeting that I wanted to do this. I must say I was very pleased today, in the wake of General Scowcroft's visit, to notice that the Chinese Foreign Ministry stated that they would not sell missiles to any Middle East countries. That subject was raised by General Scowcroft, and in my view, it's a very sound development. And I do not want to isolate the Chinese people. I don't want to hurt the Chinese people. We have certain sanctions. I hope I needn't reiterate my concerns about the events that took place in Tiananmen Square. I think we were positioned in the forefront of human rights concerns, but and I think the Chinese know that they still have to address themselves to the problems that were inherent in this episode. But I don't want to see that the China remains totally isolated. I don't want to take any further steps that are going to hurt the Chinese people. And I was very pleased that this statement on the missiles, subject having been raised by General Scowcroft, took place before he barely hit the ground here. There was some discussion about the Pelosi bill, and some political figures accusing me of not caring about human rights because I would not sign that bill. We have enacted by executive order everything that bill did, would have done, and I want to keep control of managing the foreign policy of this country as much as I can. And I didn't think that legislation was necessary, and I hope that the Congress comes back and takes a hard look at that, and then we'll go forward together as we have in the past. But generally speaking, I realize the difficulty of this relationship, but I don't want to make it any worse. I'd like to think it would improve. We have contacts with countries that have egregious records on human rights, and so I'm going to keep looking for ways to find common ground. But I realize that, and I would say to those who are out there churning around saying that we have normalized relations with China, that they simply do not know what they're talking about. Now, I'll be glad to take any questions. Yes, sir.
Mr. President, Bill Cheshire, Arizona Republic. Since the Malta summit, Vice President Quayle has expressed some disappointment with regard to the Soviet Union's activities in Central America. Does this reflect the views of the administration, or did you pick up at the Malta meeting some indication that the Soviets may be more forthcoming and cooperative as our relationship develops?
Well, I expressed the views of the United States government at the Malta meeting that I was concerned about their actions in Central America. And so I think the Vice President was reiterating a view that he knew I held. I'd like to think there would be some change in their philosophy there. I had a phone call that I told Mr. Gorbachev about from Oscar Arias, in which Arias simply asked me to raise with Gorbachev the question of Soviet support for Cuba. Arias putting a lot of blame on Cuba for the export of revolution into these fragile democracies in Central America and indeed in South America. So I raised the question very forcefully, and I hope that the Soviet Union got the message that it is impossible to have totally smooth relations with us as long as they are supporting the export of revolution into these democratically elected countries. So there's no difference between myself and the Vice President on this matter, and he was reiterating really a position that I have taken. I'll try to go from side to side, sir.
Mr. President, Tom Dearmore, the San Francisco Examiner. Do you think the PLO is inspiring or orchestrating at least part of the Intifada riot activity? And if so, do you think Israel should be pressured or obliged to negotiate on any more than elections until this violence subsides?
I don't think the Israel should be pressured into negotiating with the PLO. Is that the question?
Yes.
No, they should not be. Jim Baker is working out a very difficult formulation with the Israelis, with the Egyptians, under which the representatives of Palestinian people would sit down and talk. And it has been very difficult. Mubarak, you remember, had his 10 points. Baker came up with 5 points. There has been progress on that, incidentally. But I don't think it is the role of the United States to force Israel to negotiate with the PLO. Yes, sir.
President Eric Reindel, New York Post. Can you envisage any steps the Chinese government might take that would lead to the lifting of the sanctions that are now in place?
Yes, but I'm not going to detail them for you. The question was, can I envision steps that the Chinese government can take that would result in the lifting of the sanctions? Yes, and we have had an opportunity to discuss that at very high levels in the Chinese hierarchy. And I think it is important that they know how we feel on this question as to what changes need to take place. But let me reiterate, there has not been normalization of relations because General Scowcroft, at my request, and it was my idea, my suggestion, went over there and had very high-level talks in China. Who had it over here? Yeah.
Joseph Stern of the Baltimore Sun.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, could you discuss the question of German reunification, particularly what steps need to be taken internationally to deal with that question, the Helsinki conference, possibly a second one, possibly a peace conference to settle borders?
I think the Helsinki Agreement speaks to the question of borders. And it does provide for peaceful change, but it mainly recognizes existing borders. And that is a given. That is a position that we respect and that we support. I think it's very important that the United States not appear to be trying to accelerate the change in Germany, that we not be out setting timetables or suggesting how fast this question, very difficult question for some, of German reunification be addressed. And so what we've done is simply let the process go forward. I haven't been able to predict the rapidity of change in Eastern Germany. If you find somebody that has, please let me know who that clairvoyant so-and-so is, because I don't think there is anybody that has been totally right. But we put on the table, and I don't have them with me, 4 points that should guide the question of German reunification. But it is one that is highly sensitive to the Soviet Union, and we don't have to do it just their way. It is of some concern to some of our European allies, but the NATO position and the position at Helsinki guide the U.S. view still on German reunification, yeah.
Just one follow-up to that. Chancellor Kohl has made the point that Helsinki solves it only in a political context, and you need a peace treaty to deal with the border question in international law.
Well, eventually, I think that we can address ourselves to that question. As you know, you have the four-power occupying provisions, but I don't think that it's in our interest to be setting dates for the finalization of this. Secretary Baker is discussing that at this very minute with our various friends abroad. But the thing, and I don't want to come out looking like I oppose change from the status quo in the GDR. But I just don't want to be in the position of trying to accelerate the question of German reunification. It's too sensitive, and it's not the role for the United States to do that, sir.
I'm sorry.
Mr. President, Bob White from the Star Tribune in Minneapolis. I was interested in your observation about Chinese missiles, and I wondered what makes that different. The Chinese, for years, when we were so concerned about the missiles at the Strait of Hormuz, were denying that they had sent missiles to anybody. Why is this substantively different, and why is it suddenly important now?
Well, because we've represented, sir, that they ought not to be selling missiles into the unstable Middle East. And for this to have been raised now, and then having this instant response, I view that as good. Well, if they proved to not be telling the truth, that wouldn't be good. So I think you say what's different about it. I think the fact that it was raised and then responded to with this rapidity is a good sign. There are many issues of difference that we have with the Chinese, or potential difference, and so I think that one does not address itself to human rights in China, but I think it's important. I think it's important that a top U.S. official sit down with China 24 hours later. We're told this, and, you know, if it works out badly, why, that wouldn't be productive. Yes, ma'am.
Rena Peterson, Dallas Morning News. At a time when a powerful individual such as Alfred Herrhausen can be killed by terrorists, doesn't it seem extremely risky to be attending the drug summit in Colombia? I wonder if you've reconsidered attending.
Well, I'm going to take a look at that situation, but we got a courageous president in Mr. Virgilio Barco, and I don't know that. Well, I put it this way. I don't want to send some signal that Virgilio Barco cannot provide the proper security for three heads of state visiting his country. I don't want to undermine the courageous stance he's taking by taking a view that would hurt what he's trying to do. And I'm sure that if the security concerns are raised to him, we have a long time before the meeting, but near the time of the meeting, he would agree with the objective assessments. But right now, I'm very hopeful that the meeting will take place in Cartagena. And I have so much respect for him, and I know the enormous problem he's under from people that want him to give up the fight on extradition or fight against the narco traffickers. And I don't want to be the one that sends a signal that nobody should go to Colombia because they can't be protected. So I've got time to take a final decision on that. I will listen to the experts. I will not do anything imprudent. Nobody has ever accused me of being too daring. And so but I don't want to send, I don't want to undermine this courageous leader, sir.
Mr. President, Jim Clarifel for Newsday. I was wondering, in terms of the German question, whether you could give us a better, more detailed sense of your discussions with President Gorbachev on that matter, and also what type of steps the United States, with or without the Soviet Union, can take to prevent that situation from kind of reaching hyperspeed, the type of situation you seem to be concerned about now.
Well, how the U.S. can affect that?
How the U.S. can do it by itself, or if there's a need for the U.S. and the Soviet Union to work jointly.
Well, one thing you do is keep from doing imprudent things. There was a while when I was being criticized for not waxing enthusiastic enough. Some even suggested that it would be appropriate for the president to rush over to the Berlin Wall to show his excitement. I was excited, but I thought it would be foolish to go to the Berlin Wall, because you could evoke a response that could have been totally counterproductive. But this is the kind of subject that we can discuss with the head of the Soviet Union, but it's not going to be determined between Bush and Gorbachev. That's the kind of the spirit of that's in the past, that he and I would sit down and try to determine the fate of Germany. That is not the role that I'm going to play. That's not the role for the President of the United States. And so we will watch the procedures. We'll have the talks that you've read about in the last couple of days, these four power talks at a ambassadorial level. We will stay in touch so we don't miss a signal of some sort. But this is a matter for the German people to decide. It isn't a matter that's going to be determined by the United States. And so that's the way I look at it, and that's the way our policy is being conducted now. Yes, sir.
Peter Schrag from the Sacramento Bee, McClatchy Newspapers. Mr. President, I think it can be said, and I think most people agree, that the events of the last year indicate that the Cold War has been going our way. Can we say the same thing about the economic competition that we've had overseas? And given the events that have unfolded in the last few months, is your administration now going to put more focus on the latter rather than the former?
Well, I don't know about more focus, but we're going to put plenty of focus on it, because you raise a very important question, the question of fairness in trade. And we have tried, through a very tough and honest negotiator, our trade representative, Carla Hills, to make the point that if we're going to go forward with these trade relationships, they have to be fair trade. I have made the point on several occasions to Mr. Delors and the EC and to our trading partners in various settings with our European friends that the American people are properly insisting that the barriers come down. I remain committed to free trade, but it's got to be fair. And I do think we can do a better job of showing our concern about that. And I'm going to try to resist protectionist legislation when it comes down the pike, pure protectionist. But the way to avoid it is for us to make more progress in the negotiation. So I think you'll see a heightened attention to trade matters. I'm going to avoid bashing some trading partner, popular though that might be in the political arena. I think it's bad foreign policy, and I think it's bad for the United States as a whole. But I am not sanguine. I am not relaxed about where we stand, and I will fight hard to have our people, Secretary of Agriculture, USTR, Secretary of Commerce, make progress in all these forums on international trade. I hope that the political changes continue around the world, thus lessening tensions, so that we can put a lot more attention on the trade sector. I don't want to reply to that part of your question that I think that things are so good in terms of the change in Eastern Europe or changes with the Soviet Union that we can totally relax. I know they're not that good with China, for example. Yes, sir.
Edward Fike, San Diego Union. Mr. President, are you not concerned that your warming relationship with China may send the wrong signal to the Kremlin about future possible oppression of the unrest?
No, I have no concern about that at all. As long as we are positioned in favor of human rights and against totalitarian oppression, and I think we are properly positioned. But we have China is a billion plus people. They have a strategic position in the world that remains important to us, and I'd like to think that they will redress some of the grievances that continue to exist. And as long as Soviet Union knows that we're not sending a signal of, quote, total normalization, unquote, I think there's no risk in your question. But I will be very careful that we don't send that signal. And I think given the recent meeting with Mr. Gorbachev, I think there's very little likelihood, Ed, of that misunderstanding cropping up, sir.
Yes, I'm Ed Ramsey with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. As you know, we've just had a very close election in Virginia. And Democratic candidate, we think, has won. We have to wait for a recount on that by a very narrow margin. And some say that he won primarily because of the Republican candidate's rigid opposition to abortion. Many Democrats are very gleeful over the fact also that as the Berlin Wall collapses, so will the Republican Party, because anti-communism has been the fuel that kept the party moving all these years. My question to you as leader of the Republican Party, are you losing any sleep these days over the future of your party?
No. None at all. And I've read some of that balderdash out there. And Democrats hold a seat, hold a gubernatorial seat, and they dance around the grave of what they hope is the Republican Party. And they're wrong, because the American people have not changed their fundamental views that had them support me over my opponent. And so these elections come and go. The Virginia election was a Democrat holding the seat of another Democrat. So I don't see enormous amount to rejoice in that, nor do I see a turning down of the Republican Party because a mayor in New York wins by 2 percentage points over a Republican. The story is, please write it down, that a Republican got 48% of the vote in New York City. And so I don't accept all that, and I know there's a lively debate on some of these social issues, but I also know that we are getting credit as a party for handling, I hope properly, some of the changes that are taking place in the world and having a global vision and trying to do at home those things that the American people want. I cited some of my frustrations, but I also cited some steps that have gone reasonably well. But I think we have a sound agenda, a national agenda, and I think that will benefit the party in the future. So for those who want to read something into Virginians holding on to the gubernatorial seat, that's their pleasure. But I hadn't lost a wink, really. Yeah.
Mr. President, Philip Terzian, the Providence Journal. In your inaugural address, you called for a higher level of cooperation between the executive and legislative branches. And I was wondering, in the past year, I realized the House leadership had some unexpected turmoil, but have you been pleased, distressed, surprised by the character of White House Capitol Hill relations?
Well, being somewhat of a realist, I can't say I was surprised. But there had been some negative, highly partisan comments. I pride myself on the fact that I don't believe anybody can point to a personal observation on the negative side by me about any of the Democratic leaders. And I'm going to continue that way. And I try to debrief them when we come back from Malta. I try to give them a preview and ask for their advice before I go to Malta. We talk about these domestic issues in a very open way with the leaders, and I'm going to continue that. And I think in some ways that's been good. I've taken some flack on board from some in our own party for doing that too much, for trying to work with the Democrats. But I was elected to make certain things happen, and I'm going to continue to try to make certain things happen. I cited an unfulfilled agenda here. But if I had to sum up my feelings at the end of the year, I'd say there are some frustrations, but I'm determined when the Congress comes back to hold out the hand and try again. We have good relationships with the Speaker, and the Senate side, reasonably good, and so we're gonna keep working on that. But there have been some good moments, and there have been some enormous frustrations, I guess is the way to wrap it up. Yes, sir.
President, I'm John Zakarian from the Hartford Current, Hartford, Connecticut. How likely is it for Jennifer Casola to receive a fair trial in El Salvador, given the breakdown of law and order in that country, and also given the initial remarks that came out of the White House when she was arrested?
Well, I think it's essential that she receive a fair trial. And I have instructed our ambassador, and indeed talk to Christiani personally, to represent to the Salvadorans that it's essential that a fair trial be granted. And having said that, I'm satisfied so far that will take place. But it is essential that it not only take place, but that it have all the appearances of fairness. And I think that's what Mr. Christiani is determined to do. That one is very complex, but so far I've seen no indication that she will not receive a fair trial. I have expressed my own concern about the FMLN shooting up civilians and shooting up going after a democratically elected government that was elected in certifiably free elections. And I think when Oscar Arias calls and urges that the Soviets intervene to see that this kind of thing doesn't go on, it makes an impression on me. But we ought to separate these cases and just do everything we can to insist that whoever it is be granted a fair hearing and a fair trial. And I hope that will be the case in Jennifer Casola. Yes, sir.
Byron White, Cincinnati Post. Cincinnati being the home of Marvin Warner and Charles Keating, we've got quite an interest in the SNL crisis. You mentioned in your remarks that you saw the fact that the SNL package guaranteed depositors their money as being a positive. However, some are suggesting that the fact that maximum level of insurance is so high is part of the problem. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
On deposit insurance?
The maximum level of insurance, $100,000 on depositors' insurance, is being part of the reason for some of the problems with Lincoln Savings and so forth?
I don't want to dodge your question, but I don't know enough about the specifics in that case to give you an opinion as to whether the $100,000 limit on savings deposits affected it or not. All I do know is we got to clean it up, and it's a whale of a whale of a mess, and we'll see where we go. But we had this one refinancing. I'm now told that that might not be enough, and whether you can attribute it to your question or not, I'm embarrassed to say I just don't have a good answer for you. Yes, sir, Wayne, back.
David Cole with the Philadelphia Inquirer. It sometimes seems that missing from your agenda and from your comments today has been anything relating to the problems of American cities, particularly the problems of urban poverty. And it leads to an inclination to think that perhaps you don't think these problems are amenable to a federal initiative. Is that correct?
No, that's incorrect. I thought child care had a lot to do with that. I thought the question of anti-crime legislation has a lot to do with that, because those areas are the most severely impacted. But I'm glad you raised it, because it is totally incorrect. Yes, sir.
Chris Colford from the Cleveland.
I also mentioned the creation of jobs. That's very important to the inner cities. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. As we await your next budget for next year, there's some anxiety that there may be another round of cuts in human and domestic services. For example, the Legal Services Corporation, where you recently offered a recess appointment for a new chairman. Can you give us some assurances that the kinder, gentler administration will have adequate funding for human services?
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised when you take the overall budget and its concerns for city affairs or human affairs, Well, I don't know the exact levels on legal services. We're in the final processes of budget right now. I go from this meeting to another marvelous meeting with Dick Darman and a big, thick notebooks over there, so I'm not ducking it. I just don't know the answer. But generally speaking, I think you're going to find that we are able to finance the initiatives that I talked about, some of which I mentioned here, that do affect the welfare of the American people, particularly those that are disadvantaged. Yeah. Last two, 1-2.
Sherilyn Holmes with San Antonio Express News, Mr. President. Could you tell us when a decision will be announced on the relocation of Southern Command in Panama?
No, sir. I don't know. I'm not ducking it. I just don't know the answers. Can anyone help with that? Bob? I know people in San Antonio have a keen interest in this, and I can understand why, but I just don't know the answer to that one. Yes, last one.
Shelley Cohen from the Boston Herald. There have been widely divergent accounts this morning of the credibility of a witness to the murder of those priests in El Salvador. Is it not time to go public with that investigation? If not now, when?
Widely.
We have a report
as to whether she's credible witness or not.
Yes, we have a report out of El Salvador that she had flunked lie detector tests. We have other reports from the clergy in El Salvador that she's being brainwashed. Could you respond to that?
Yeah, I can respond to the last part of it, and because when I read that, I looked into that, and I'm assured that is not the case. But I think you ask a good question as to when all this will become public. It should be, and I'd like to see it as soon as possible. But there are some concerns, and all I would say is that she was accompanied by a person from the U.S. Embassy. I believe the Justice Department has had the custodianship or taken a keen interest in all of this. And I have confidence that our Attorney General would not permit the kind of inquisition process that was alluded to in the papers today. And so it is very important, just as in the Casolo case, that this be resolved fairly and to the satisfaction of the American people. And that is going to mean the disclosure that you're asking about. And so I want to just assure you that this will take place. I think it's important that it's done in a way so there's no, tampering with evidence, but prejudicing the legal proceedings that are taking place. I think that's very important.
Will you order the FBI to make this investigation public in the reasonably near future?
Well, I'll do it within the confines of the legal proceedings. I don't want to order them to do something and then have them say the very fact you have done this is making it difficult to get a reasonable solution to the question everybody's asking, what happened? But I think in fairness to her, I have already guaranteed to my satisfaction that she is not being mishandled. And I don't think that people would tell me something that's not true there, because there would be a price to pay for that. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Now, who's next? We'll see you all.
Thanks. So the president has been speaking to those who write editorials for the various newspapers around the country. He came over from the White House to the adjacent executive offices building to, for the past 35 or 40 minutes or so, hold forth on a number of subjects as the editorial writers are meeting here in Washington, and he's giving them grist for their mills. Our White House correspondent Frank Sesno now can join us and summarize what the president had to say. Frank?
Well, Reed, the top of the news, of course, was the president's comments on his China mission, his high-level staffers who went to China over the weekend in a very secretive affair, one that has drawn a great deal of criticism from some on Capitol Hill and elsewhere who say that this was buckling in and making the first move as far as the situation in China is concerned. There still is no dialogue there. The Tiananmen Square massacre still fresh in the minds of most here in Washington and elsewhere throughout the world. The president not only defending and standing by that decision, but saying it has already borne some fruit. Primarily, General Scowcroft, the National Security Advisor, raising with the Chinese the U.S. strong sense that missiles, Chinese missiles, should not be sold to Middle Eastern countries, principally Syria. And now a word from the president anyway, saying that the foreign ministry in Beijing has said that that indeed is the case. The Chinese claim they will not sell such missiles to Middle Eastern countries. The president said that sort of instant response is a good sign and one that he strongly welcomes. Beyond that, the president pointing out the sorts of things that we've been hearing at the White House all day today, and that is that China remains a country of strategic importance as a preeminent place to play in world affairs. He says he promised a briefing to the Chinese before he went to Malta. A billion people live in China, the president observed, and obviously he says this is a country that needs to be reckoned with. All that being said, the president insists that it is not business as usual with China. He says the sanctions remain in place. General Scowcroft and Mr. Eagleburger from the State Department raised their strong concerns with the Chinese on the subject of human rights. But this seems to be a case of the president trying to make good on some of his own words from his inaugural, when he said, "Goodwill begets goodwill." He's now clearly hoping that the Chinese will respond in kind with some goodwill of their own. Frank says, now CNN live at the White House.
We're out of time. This has been a CNN special report. I'm Reed Collins in Washington.